5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
The second episode of Season 4 takes us to Denver, Colorado for an in-depth conversation with Altitude Sports Radio and TV personality Vic Lombardi. Glad to have you here. I am Jason Barrett. Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Today's chat with Vic is one I think you're going to really enjoy. We got into a number of interesting topics about the business. It won't take you long to pick up on how much he lives and breathes this industry. That discussion is coming up in just a few moments. If you haven't heard the podcast before, thanks for checking it out. We're available on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes. If you're listening to us on iTunes, take a moment to help us out by subscribing and leaving a review. For those who have listened before and are familiar with Barrett Sports Media, you've likely heard or seen news about the 2019 BSM Summit in Los Angeles. It's a two-day sports media conference that I host, which includes over 60 top-notch industry speakers and more than 150 media professionals in attendance. If you weren't able to make it to the show and want to check out what you missed, or if you did attend and just want to relive some of the cool moments that took place, I have some good news for you. I'll be making some of the sessions available in audio form later this season, so keep an eye out for future announcements. Regarding the summit, I do want to point out that I've tackled many different projects since launching BSM, but putting together this event was as tough of a task as any I've had. What you guys see promotionally through images, video, and written content, that's the payoff. But there's so much more that has to be done in the background to make an event like this happen, and man, is it daunting at times. It's a lot to absorb, but I also know this format doesn't have anything like it, and I think it's important for industry people to get out of their surroundings and expand their horizons. I was fortunate to have the support of Premier Radio Networks, Fox Sports Radio, ESPN, Podcast One, Hubbard Radio, Compass Media Networks, Harker Research, and Bennstown Branding to make this event happen. I realize I'm a new face and voice to some in leadership roles, but you're not going to find someone who advocates more for the sports format than I do. I attend conferences throughout the year, and I find value in everyone that I attend. But I've learned that it's important for fresh blood to be introduced to provide new insights and ideas to help grow this industry. I'm not going to tell you the BSM Summit is when you need to be at in the future, because I realize that sometimes the fit isn't right or schedules don't line up. What I will say, though, is that if you do attend, I'm positive you'll gain something from it. If you don't come to it, then I'd encourage you to get to another industry show. There's so much wisdom out there to take advantage of, but only if you make the effort to leave the comfort of your office or studio. You may think you can solve all of your problems by working harder, reading the internet, and staying where you are, but you'd be amazed what 2 days on the outside can do for you. I'm thrilled that so many programmers, talent agents, and production people made the trip to be with us for the summit. We also had a good showing from radio GMs and executives. My goal going forward is to add even more executives in the room to help us continue elevating the performance of this format. But 2020 can wait. We'll cross that bridge down the line. Okay, but enough of my summit speech. I could go on all day about that. Let's get back to the focus of this episode. That's Vic Lombardi. When I sat down with Vic during the fall of 2018, he was in great spirits. He's a huge part of Altitude Sports and has been a fixture in Denver for quite some time. Unfortunately, though, news trickled out recently that Vic had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, a very scary situation. We taped this conversation before he revealed that news, and I think I speak for everyone in this business that we wish him well and hope for a speedy recovery. Vic's got tremendous passion and love for his work, and the sooner he's back behind the microphone and camera on a daily basis doing what he enjoys most, the better it will be for everybody, especially Denver sports fans. Instead of thinking about the negative, though, I want to focus on the positive. And we're going to do that by bringing you this energetic discussion with the one and only Vic Lombardi.
3, 2, 1.
Before we get into the career part and how it started,
yeah,
talk to me about the influences of who you listened to or who you watched that made you even want to pursue a business in the first place.
Well, you know, my parents are Italian immigrants. And I don't know if you can grab that from my voice, but when I was growing up, everybody thought I was like the next Jason Barrett. I was from the East Coast. They thought I was a New Yorker.
Okay.
But it was actually an Italian accent because I didn't speak English until I was 7 years old. And my parents, they would basically say, go be American. And the way I was Americanized was through sports.
Yeah.
Sports was my biggest, my coaches were my biggest influence. And I fell in love with sports at a young age. And everything I did, Jason, revolved around sports. When I was a kid, there was a couple radio hosts here in town who I felt were the pioneers of sports talk radio outside of The Fan in New York. And they were Irv Brown and Joe Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Irv and Joe, the old K-Big days. I would listen to those dudes every day. I would do it at school. I would do it away from school. That was my life growing up. So when you talk about influence, it doesn't get more influential than those two guys.
What was unique about them?
Well, number one, Irv was... He was a native. He's a Denver guy, and he talked about stuff I was interested in. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing about sports talk radio back then, these guys are talking about the same things that interest me. This is weird.
Right.
This is different, and they're asking trivia questions. And I think it just felt like listening to your uncles.
Right.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Just well, that's how it should be, right?
Yes, exactly.
You hear two or three guys on the radio, you go, I want to go have a beer with those guys.
Exactly,
and talk
right
about sports.
And that's what drew me in. And, you know, now sports talk radio is so different. There's so many different niches and how you do it, when you do it, different subject matters, different topics.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was anything goes.
Right.
And I guess that's how I almost feel today. Me, sports talk is that. It's plural. It's sports talk.
Right.
And I know we live in a day and age where the NFL is the ratings king and everything's NFL. But, I mean, you have a canvas. And if something happened last night that is a different sport, that's something that you're going to talk about.
All right. Well, let's talk about your career for a minute because there's a lot I want to get into during the course of this conversation with you. Let's go back to the beginning. How did this all begin?
When I was a kid in school here, I went to a small private Catholic school, and I knew this is what I wanted to do when I was maybe 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I did, I mean, I took a lot of writing classes, a lot of English classes, and the one thing I was really poor at is writing. I was a terrible writer, and maybe it comes from my deficiencies in English, not having learned the language, but I just focused on it, man, and I really went hard at learning how to write. I wrote for the school newspaper, and I read the newspaper aloud every day. Tried to lose my accent as much as I could every day. And I just made it a goal, man. Everything I did, every friend I made, everything I watched, everything I did was sports related.
So you worked in South Bend,
yeah,
Phoenix, Austin, and then ultimately back to Denver,
yes,
right? So who was the first employer to give Vic Lombardi a break?
When I was in school at Notre Dame, I worked part-time. I was an intern for WSJV-TV, which was the ABC affiliate at the time. In Elkhart, Indiana.
Okay.
WNDU was the Notre Dame school, but they had interns. I served my internship there, and it was over. So I said, damn, what do I do now? So I go to SJV, and they actually let me anchor shows because they only had one sports guy.
Okay.
So on Monday night, Mitch Roberts, my old friend, good dude, one guy, he'd take Monday nights off because of Monday Night Football. It would end at midnight Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody watched the sports at midnight. So you do the sports. So here I am, a senior in college, and I'm anchoring sportscasts at WSJV, not knowing how to apply makeup. Didn't even have my own sport coat, and nobody watching.
Right.
But it was the greatest training tool I could find at the time.
Yeah, because at that point, when you're early on in your career, there's no substitute for reps.
None.
You just got to get on. You're going to suck a little bit, and that's okay, because to become good, you got to suck first.
And the other thing I did from a radio perspective, because I always had roots in radio, the station on campus at Notre Dame was not doing sports talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to them when I was a sophomore. I said, hey, can we do a sports show here? And they're like, I guess. And that one thing led to another. And I said, hey, can we call Notre Dame football games on the student radio station? They go, sure, but nobody listens. Okay. So we started calling all the Notre Dame games home and away with maybe three listeners.
But it gave you experience.
Exactly.
Right?
Nobody, I didn't care who listened.
That's the thing that, you know, in your career, you've had TV, you've had the writing side, you've had the radio side. Mm-hmm. So how did you ultimately, with all, you know, starting out with the Notre Dame stuff, go into Phoenix, Austin, how'd you wind up back in Denver?
You know, it was always a goal. Denver was always a great and still remains a great television market. For those in the television business, I think they all understand this is one of those destination points for a lot of people. So the goal was always for me to return home. After South Bend, I go to Austin. Great town, but I was sending tapes home. How do I get home? How do I get home? I wasn't ready. 3 years in Austin, I go to Phoenix, mm-hmm. which is actually a bigger market than
big
Denver.
Yeah, big market.
I was in Phoenix, and I could have stayed in Phoenix, but I said, I got to get home. I actually took... demotion to come back to Denver. I was
Phoenix,
the main guy.
Weather.
Well, I was the main guy, and I came back to Denver to be the weekend guy.
Right.
Because that's how badly I wanted to come home.
Phoenix, pretty incredible weather.
Yeah.
Great scene in Scottsdale.
Sure.
That's a lot. That's tough to give
sure,
up.
Sure, sure. But,
but this is home.
Exactly. And I don't want to be rude here. Denver's a better sports market.
Right.
It just is.
No question. So when you got back to Denver, I'm guessing that started with TV, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
once you start TV, how did the radio side begin?
Radio has always been, I've got to do radio because television gives you 3 minute shots, right?
Right?
You're talking for 3 minutes and that's it. And I have more to say.
Right.
So I started asking around, poking my head around, hey, do you need help here? Can I fill in there? And, you know, I did some FM stuff for a couple FMs here, being their sports radio guy. And that led to a gig. We did a show, my friend Gary Miller and I, he mm-hmm. was a colleague at Channel 4. We did a sports talk show on the 1600 dial. And I did some work for The Fan here in town. Mm-hmm. Wonderful experience there. And now I'm at Altitude Sports.
So you grew up on Irvin Joe.
Yeah.
You started here. You talked about 1600. You obviously, The Fan was on 950. Now it's on 104.3. Altitude's come in. In your estimation, as you look back over the last 20, 30 years, how's sports radio changed in this city?
It's changed incredibly. It's gone from, it's more fire and brimstone today. It was basically, when I was growing up, hey, trivia time, sports. It's just sort of like, hey, let's ask some sports trivia questions.
Right,
you know?
Right.
There was not much meanness in the 80s and 90s. It was more information driven, but it wasn't here's how you do your job.
Right.
Today it's here's how you should be doing your job. And not to say that those guys didn't have those opinions back in the day, but it was more of a run. Like Joe Williams was one of the best. And he had this anti-Elway appeal about him. Like Elway can never do any right. But I think deep down, everybody knew it was a sort of a gimmick. It was
right.
a I mean, come on. You know, Elway couldn't do no wrong.
It's John freaking Elway.
Exactly. But he always hammered Elway. Always. Right. And so you would listen with the notion, what is Joe going to say negative about Elway today?
Mike and the Mad Dog sucked me in early on.
Yeah.
Because Chris Russo would never give the Yankees
any
credit. I'm like, they just won the most regular season games of all time and swept the World Series. And
yes.
he still will not give credit.
But as sports fans, we need that skepticism. It's fuel for
right.
us.
Right. Correct.
Because
then once you get the validation, it's worth it.
No doubt about it.
So, you know, one observation, even going back probably 10, 15 years that I've really noticed, there's a lot of ex-athletes who work in sports radio here.
Mm-hmm.
Even guys who are not doing full-time radio, Joel Klatt, Sean C. Billups, who come from here, are in broadcasting and are pretty damn good. Why is that?
I think it's the easiest thing to fall into, number one, mm-hmm. after your sport is played. And I've had the privilege of helping a lot of guys make the move because mm-hmm. I've seen some careers that have really blossomed in this town. I remember doing shows with Terrell Davis,
mm-hmm.
and now he's a stud in this business.
Right.
I remember doing shows back in the day at Channel 4 with Adam Schefter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he was doing a full newspaper beat and wanted to move into television. I remember doing shows with a lot of names that have come through. It gets you to game days. It gets you on the field. You may not have the same passion you did for the game,
right.
but it's the closest thing there is.
So when an ex-athlete wants to get into this business, and you just talked about some mm-hmm. of the experiences you've had, there are other hosts in other markets who go through this. The guy who just walked off the field wants to get in. He's never talked for 3 hours a day. What do you recommend to another host when they're working with an athlete who's going into this for the first time?
Well, you better be ready to work, number one. And when I say work, pay attention and no BS. I say this to every ex-athlete. The worst thing you can do is come in and make excuses for everybody who may be still your friends
mm-hmm.
or just say things that you normally said in the locker room. The locker room is no longer your home.
Right.
Okay, I get it. When you're interviewing an athlete in the locker room, You're not going to throw coaches or teammates under the bus. Right. I totally get it. And I'm not saying you have to do it, but you have to be fair and you have to be honest. If you can be fair and honest, and you see a lot of these guys, like the light bulb hits, I've heard a lot of ex-athletes, and sometimes it takes a couple months. Sometimes it takes a year.
Most guys usually take like 3 to 5 years because they're still close.
Exactly.
And
right.
Once that locker room changes, now it's
exactly
hey,
right.
I don't got an affiliation there.
Yes. But you when you hear that first moment that they sort of they dip their foot in the pool, oh, I can say this. Oh, I'm gonna go a little farther here. I'm gonna go and then it's like, okay, now they get it.
Well, and the first time, you know, a lot of times I've had some guys work for me who've went through this. They get those alumni checks to show up and do the appearances,
sure.
right? And then they give a hard opinion and then they show up at you know, football headquarters the next day. And we really don't like that. And it could influence the next time we put you on an appearance. And I'm like, so I used to do this with one guy. I would bring him in. I would say, come back with your paycheck. I want to see what logo is on that paycheck. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, when it's got the team's logo on there,
then
I get it. Yeah. Until then, you work for this audience now. And you got to remember you're talking to an audience.
You know what's amazing, Jason? We had this discussion, a few of us. It's amazing how many former offensive linemen from the NFL make great hosts, great analysts, great media members. And it's so funny because working in Denver, Schlereth, Nalen, they didn't talk. And yet those guys were remarkably good. So I've learned a lot. I've learned not to judge guys talking to them today. They may end up being very good at this. They're just serving a different role.
So you're working now for a guy, Dave Tepper. I'll get to him later on when we talk about altitude. But you've also worked for a couple other PDs who, in the format, people know. Tim Spence, Nate Lundy, right? What are some of the things that those guys taught you along the way, and what are some of the things they did that drove you nuts?
Tim taught me a lot about chemistry. When I first started at The Fan, he put me together with a couple guys, and he was really intent on listening to me with other dudes. And, you know, I knew nothing that deep about the business. I just start talking.
Right.
But chemistry matters. It really does. Mm-hmm. And Tim was all about protocol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I consider myself still a TV guy doing radio.
Right.
And I think he didn't like that. And that's fine. That's fair.
Yeah.
Nate, at times, you know, he was the opposite. He was just like, hey, anything goes. Nate gave me a lot of room. He gave me a lot of rope. I mean, heck, I was doing news when I was at Channel 4 here in town, the CBS affiliate. I was doing daily newscasts. So I'd get home at midnight thereafter and then do a morning show. And I told Nate, I don't know how I can do mornings having to drive an hour. I mean, I'd be sleeping 2 hours.
Right.
So they set up a shop in my home. And I did the morning show from my home, and it wasn't ideal, but it worked. And we did it for 3-4 years. It was awesome.
Right.
And so he gave me that opportunity. The beauty of this is, here's one thing I've learned about radio. You have to respect your bosses.
Yep.
You have to respect your coworkers, but you don't always have to get along with them.
Right.
This whole, let's hold hands and skip across the studio, that's a bunch of bull. My wife and I are mad at each other every day. Been married 23 years.
So you mentioned before, you work with Gary Miller. You've worked with some other guys like Kyle Keefe, Mike Evans. What do you think's the key to, you mentioned before how Tim Spence talked about chemistry, and I agree with that. What do you think's the key to a team show being successful?
Know your role. And that's very difficult because my role has changed. You know, when I worked at The Fan, when I worked with Gary and I are both TV guys doing a radio show. So that was our shtick. You know, we both jumped on it. We were both lead guy. We were both analyst guy. We were both joke guy. We both sort of shared that role. When I go to The Fan, Mike Evans, who I consider one of the best traffic cops in sports talk radio, he's very good at what he does. And he makes it look so easy. I just sort of played the banana guy who would just say things on the side. And, you know, it was fun. It was easy for me. It was easy. Very easy.
Right.
When I try to play his role now, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Right.
Put it that way. So
your
role.
You're definitely a guy with a lot to say. And that's how I remembered you before I started getting to know you here.
Sure.
We were joking that one day how you go through your notes on your phone to remember stuff to come back to.
You know what driving does? When you drive a show and you have to go from topic to topic, it makes me forget why I'm reacting. I'm like, I wanted to say something profound about this, but I'm so hell-bent on getting to the next topic, I forgot what I was going to say.
And on top of that, you got to make sure your partner gets involved and listen to what he's saying
while
you're
easy.
Reading. It's hard.
It ain't easy.
And that's why guys like Evans are really good at what they do.
They make it look easy, and trust me, there is a great skill in that.
So I want to ask you about something that you went through probably 5 years ago, because every host who says something eventually has, or does something, has that one moment where, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And your deadspin moment with Joe Flacco signs, right?
Around
town.
Yeah.
And here's why I'm bringing it up.
Sure.
Until your name is out somewhere else outside of your market, you know, you wake up that day, you go, Really? This is what people care about outside of Denver, and I'm dealing with all this extra reaction?
Yeah.
How did you handle that?
Well, let me start from the beginning, because in hindsight, man, I never want that to happen again. It felt childish, and it still feels childish. So after the Broncos were eliminated by the Baltimore Ravens in that painful game at Mile High Stadium where Raheem Moore misplayed the ball, and you know the rest of the story. So that was a great Broncos team. So the following season, in the opening game of the season, Baltimore had a baseball game, and they could not, well, for whatever reason, they could not host the home opener. Mm-hmm. So the NFL decides it's a joint home game, and there are Joe Flacco banners all over downtown Denver. I mean, this is Denver, Colorado, right, and Flacco's face is all over downtown because the NFL seems fit to say, hey, it's a home game for Baltimore. No, it ain't. So I said, you know what? Let's have some fun with this. And it was all done out of fun.
Right.
I go down on television, and I draw a little mustache on one of Flacco's faces. You know, come on. I mean, I don't even know Joe Flacco. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a fellow Paisan. I mean, I don't care. You know, but I'm having fun with this. So one thing leads to another. Word comes in Baltimore that the sportscaster's defacing Joe Flacco. And so this guy gets me on a radio show over there and starts talking. And then I get angry. He gets angry. I said some things I shouldn't have said. And I look like an idiot.
Right.
So what started out as just a meaningless, fun jab at the NFL, it wasn't directed at Baltimore. It was directed at the NFL.
Right.
Makes me look like some idiot here in Denver.
Well, Vic, you had been around the business for a while at that point, so it's not like you needed an education, but this was also a situation that was brand new to you. What exactly did you learn from it?
It's a small world. It's smaller than you think, and it happened again to me at altitude. I was on the sidelines of a Nuggets-Cleveland Cavaliers game as a fan, and I was mic'd up as a fan. Act like a fan. Watch this game like a fan.
Right.
And so Richard Jefferson comes up to me and says, hey, poke fun at LeBron. So I'm talking trash. It gets on a national feed. A local sportscaster, sideline guy, talks trash. I wasn't even in my sideline role. But I guess my message to everybody is, it's a small world. What you think you could say is out there. And once it's out there, you can't control it. Man, if this stuff were around, Jason, in the 90s, when I was really stupid, I may not be working today.
Right.
If the internet was around and Instagram and all this business, oh my God, I was way stupider back then.
Right. Now, there are a lot of guys on radio here who've got local roots, but there have been a couple that have come through that haven't been from here. Like Darren McKee's done that.
Yeah.
Zach Bye's done that. You're a Denver guy. You love this town. For a radio host to be successful here who's not from here, what do they have to do?
Well, you have to, and I've had this conversation with those guys before, and they do a very good job of it. You have to adopt whatever market you're in.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked in Phoenix, I was still a Bronco fan, but if the Broncos played the Cardinals, I wouldn't trot out there in my Broncos jersey. That's insane.
Yep.
What are you doing? Your audience is listening to you for your version of what they think every day.
Right.
So you have to adopt that. But what this town has done, they're becoming so transient.
Mm-hmm.
There are more people I meet every day who are not from here. So I have to recognize and understand that. And you have to respect where they're from.
Right.
If there's a dude that grew up in Pittsburgh, that's a 45-year-old, and he's a Steeler fan, man, you know, you can't mock him for that. I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand it. But I'm talking Denver sports.
Yep.
This is where I'm from.
So you've been around the game for a while, and yet you still go out to Broncos camp. You're obviously involved with TV with the Nuggets, right? I mean, this isn't just a 3-hour radio show. Your life doesn't end at 10:01.
Yeah.
It just begins. We got a lot of young guys who've come through this business, some that I'm sure have, you know, worked their tail off and become successful, others who probably don't take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah.
Guys who do the 3-hour show but don't want to go to the Rockies game at night because they got to get up, or they don't want to go to Broncos practice after a show because they're mentally taxed.
Sure.
You're one of the lead guys in this market, and you still do all that.
Yeah.
What's your advice to young guys who are pursuing this business of what they should be doing?
If you're not doing that, I question if this is really what you want to do. I mean, sports is my life.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, well, you know, you hear this from pro athletes. Football doesn't define me. Basketball. You know what? This defines me.
Right.
This is who I am. I love sports. I've made a life of this. And I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have this.
Right.
You know when I'm most miserable, to be honest, and this is sad to say, sometimes when I'm on vacation and I'm not doing something with the kids and I'm just hanging around, that to me, that's almost misery. But I guess my advice to young ones starting this, if you don't love it both feet in, like wanting to do it all the time, you're probably not doing what you want to do.
Well, some guys, like, you get in the door, then you start getting the check, and you kind of feel like, all right, here, I've arrived. And they don't recognize that, hey, man, this is, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money the first couple of years. You're going to work 15 hours, and you're going to feel underpaid.
Yeah. Like,
it's just the way it goes. But I see, you know, I travel the country, and I see these examples everywhere where there's some guys who really want it, and some guys who, like, think they do a 2 or 3 hour show, they go on social media, answer a few tweets, and they think that was the day.
You know, it's just like anything, Jason. It's just, again, it's like the Kobe analogy. Why is Kobe such a great shooter? Why is he such a great player? You don't see Kobe behind you don't see the hours he puts in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this business, we see guys on the air for a 3 hour show or a 3 minute spot on television. You don't see the hours, the essential hours that make those few minutes so good.
Right.
That's the difference.
That's why great players are great. So this radio station you're working for, Altitude 92.5, made a recent decision in September to move to FM. Why was that so important for you?
Well, it's very much like when HD came across and people were going from standard definition television to HD. Does it change the message? No.
Right.
But it just changes something.
Yep.
It's just something about hearing the FM, the stereo, and you're in your car or you're in the office and you hear that. It's just, it feels more important. It feels like you have arrived. When I grew up on AM radio, man. I mean, to me, it didn't matter. I'll listen to a tin cup of them, but it matters to today's ears.
Well, and back then when we grew up on radio, there was no FM sports radio. Now
exactly. It's
where most people are.
Yes. And it's that sphere and you have to join it. Like it or not, it is what it is.
Right.
I think moving forward, you have to be in stereo.
So with that said, you know, you worked at The Fan. They've been successful for a long time. You talked about how Denver's been a transient market. It's a great sports market. Is this city big enough for two thriving FM sports stations?
I think it is. Until otherwise, it is. There are people that are willing to spend money, and that's what it comes down to. If there are people willing to spend the money, then that's all you need to know. I'm truly a capitalist when it comes to that. but you know, listen, man, we're in a market where for so many years it's been a one-horse town because we've made it a one-horse town.
Mm-hmm.
I think we in the media are just as guilty as anyone else because the easy thing to fall back on, we'll just go cover the Broncos intently. The harder thing to do is cover this other team as intently as we do the Broncos because there are some angles here that the fans ought to know about.
Right.
So it falls on us too. You know, it's a chicken or egg.
Yeah.
Is it a one-horse town because we made it that or because the fans made it that?
Yeah, and you know, it's hard because I went through this when I moved to San Francisco in 2011. The Giants, the Niners, and the Warriors run the town. And I'm going up against a competitor that has all three rights.
Sure.
And I'm like, all right, how the hell am I going to compete? But they're excluding the other side of town.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, there's a rabid fan base here that feels pissed off that they get no coverage. On the other hand, if you don't play in this other space, you're probably going to be in tough shape. And I always would tell guys, and it's probably something I would say here, is if I took these other three teams away, how would you feel?
You
feel pretty devastated,
right?
So why not give them some? It doesn't mean that the Broncos don't deserve a lot of coverage, but there's plenty of room. This is we're on the air 13 to 15 hours a day. There's plenty of room to talk about stuff.
You know, I'm learning every day. I'm almost 50 years old, and I'm learning how to put a show together every single day. And I know that, you know, getting to every point as fast as you can because, you know, people don't listen to the radio for all those 3 hours.
Right.
So I get it. But my whole ticket is this. If I'm out and about, I'm in Home Depot. What's relevant? What are people into? What's the discussion today?
Mm-hmm.
I want to hit that first.
Yep.
Whatever they're into that day.
So I mentioned before, you know, Tim Spence and Nate Lundy, and I know you just started getting familiar with Dave Tepper. He just moved here, I think, in August. First impressions, what stood out?
Dave, really, the first impression I had of him is, okay, this guy's got sort of a laid-back approach to this, but he's very thoughtful. Now, mm-hmm. I want to learn. What are his thoughts? What makes good talk radio?
Right.
And in just the few conversations I've had with him, you sort of understand what your strengths and what your weaknesses are and how to make your weaknesses better. And that's where I'm at right now. You know, the last 3 weeks, I've changed the way I do shows, just sort of understanding how listeners listen. I've always done shows based on what I think they want to hear.
Right.
But how are they listening?
Yep.
That's more important than anything.
Well, and you know, I'm interested. We were talking about this before about having some give and take. You're one of Dave's most important guys on this radio station. Let's call it what it is. You're a morning drive for a reason. What's important to you as a host when it comes to a host PD relationship?
I want to be told the truth. I really do. Because I think people are afraid to get criticism. Here we're paid. Think about this. We're paid every day to say, oh, this manager screwed that up. Oh, that guy, how does he miss that jumper?
Right.
Tell me, when did I screw up? How did I screw up? I may argue with you.
Right.
I may say, no, you don't. You know, I want to be told why it didn't work.
No, it's fair. I mean, candor goes a long way. I want to ask you one last thing, and then I got something I do called quick hits, which will be four quick questions. First thought that jumps to mind. But one of the things that I've seen in a couple situations, like in this town, you worked for Kroenke Sports Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Okay, they've got the Nuggets, the Avalanche, Pepsi Center, like some great people, a lot of great assets, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also sometimes to the fan that stigma that you work for the team, will you be honest? And now anyone who listens to you knows you're going to be pretty honest. Mm-hmm. Probably to the point where some bosses would probably say, Vic, settle down on the honesty.
Yes.
But what's the stigma that you battle with that and how you go about convincing someone who might think that? How do you change their mind? That's
a very fair assessment. And I say this. When I worked at CBS, I considered myself, I really had a journalist. I was working for a team, for an organization that had zero affiliation with any team in town. And what I said, everything was done unbiased. My bias hasn't changed. But now I'm getting paid by the same people that pay Nuggets players and Avs players. I am not a bona fide journalist anymore. Okay. Right. However, I am fair. And if you're not fair, the listener will hear it and he'll see right through you. I can be fake,
right?
But fake don't work.
Right. You gotta
because
be honest.
There are too many sports fans, sophisticated sports fans, who can see right through that. You gotta be you, man. And they hired me here to be me.
Right.
And that's what I'm gonna do.
So it's great when you're in a great sports city, you get plenty to talk about. All right, quick hits. First thought that jumps to your mind on these. Best and worst Denver athlete to cover has been who?
Peter Forsberg was sensational. He didn't say much, but he was so raw and honest and likable. I liked him personally, so that might not be a good thing for me to... he was just a personally good dude. He was one of the best. Joe Sack, hockey guys tend to be...
I know. I was a big Joe Sack
crazy?
Guy.
Crazy? Hockey guys are all like that. John Lynch, among the best to cover. The worst, God, I mean, there are a lot of guys that never gave you the time of day. Wilson Chandler once went on Twitter and said Vic Lombardi is a dumbass or something like that. I had no problems with him. I really did, but I sort of laughed it off. I've never
Did
really...
you just tell him thanks for the followers?
No, I actually went up to him afterwards. I said, hey, what's the problem? And he never really told me what the problem was. I guess my issue is if an athlete, and I've had these wars with athletes before, but they never turn into public wars. I think that's silly to turn them into public wars. Because guess what? We have our jobs because of them. Now, I'm not propping them up as the all, but we have our jobs because of them. Just remember that.
Second question. You brought up social media. Favorite Denver personality to rib on social media?
Oh, I rip on D-Mac all the time.
Oh, I see it. That's
why. And we have fun. D-Mac and I are good friends, but every time I rip on D-Mac, I rip on Evans, I rip on the opposing guys all the time. But I've worked with these dudes, man. We were all in this together. They know exactly where I'm coming from when I rip them. I think it's good natured. We, you know, listen, man, in the end, we all have families. We know what we're doing, but they give. I like to take as well.
Right.
Let's go. Let's have a fun.
Best host you've heard during your period in Denver has been who? At Sports Talk. Let me be clear on that.
It's a tie. It's Evans and D-Mac. Mm-hmm. They're the two best. And you know what? Right up there is Kreckman. Kreckman's really good at what he does. Mm-hmm. And he used to be my producer when Gary and I did our shows together. But he really understands the nuances of this business. And the more I listen with that discerning ear, the more I learn that. But I tell you what, the hosts in this town, we are blessed with a lot of them. But working with Evans was tremendous. Listening to D-Mac, as I still do, you learn a lot from those guys. They're really good.
Now, last, because I know your Denver passions and how much you love these teams. Broncos have brought you a title. The Avs have brought you a title. I give you one.
Nuggets, stop.
Okay.
If the Nuggets win a title.
So wait. The Rockies will never win again.
Nuggets. I'm a basketball guy. I'm a basketball, and I love baseball, but I play basketball to this day. I'm a basketball guy. That's who I am. It's what I do. So, and the Nuggets, God, you know, we have this thing called Nug Life. It's a hashtag Nug Life. You just know it's very fatalistic and it sucks, but if the Nuggets, and I've gone on the record, if the Nuggets win a title, I'm done. I'm gone. I'm done. I'm putting the microphone down. I'll go work at my dad's apartment buildings. I'm out.
Well, they made a good move on draft night getting Porter.
Let's hope so.
I just hope his health is good.
I know.
Believe me, as a Knicks fan, I was devastated that they didn't take him and you guys got him.
I'm with you, brother.
Well, it's good seeing you, man.
Jason, thanks, man. Thanks for your work, by the way.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter
at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.